Good morning and welcome to Mornings for the Master here on the Gospel Radio Network. I'm Ryan Smithy in with Chip Horton this morning.
Good morning.
Certainly thankful that you have been able to join us as we continue our study through the Old Testament, and particularly this morning through the Book of Psalms, as we are approaching the end of that collection. We are in Psalm 140 and 141 this morning, and so we invite your attention there, and hope that you can join us in that study this morning. A few things that do want to take a moment to remind you of as we begin, and certainly first and foremost upcoming is RVBS right here at the Mount Vernon congregation, and that's going to be this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, 6:30 to 8 on Thursday and Friday night, and then 10:30 in the morning to noon on Saturday. And talking this year about the power of God and God's creating power, His fighting power, and His saving power. And so, Chip, I know y'all have done a lot of work on that, and looking forward to seeing the good results of that work.
We shall see.
And certainly encourage you, if you're in the area, whether as a youth or as an adult, there will be classes for all ages, and so we encourage you to be with us. Had a great night last night with the Summer Youth Series, talking about Jonah and the whale, and Richard did a great job on that topic. Just a few left. We'll be at Oak Grove, Lord willing, next Monday night, talking about the father and the prodigal son. And so be marking your calendars for that, August 14th at 7 p.m. And that is going to be at the Oak Grove congregation just north of Mount Pleasant. And in conjunction with that, also Oak Grove is having their gospel meeting this coming week, beginning Sunday, going through Thursday. And there is a lineup of speakers, a different speaker each day. Charles Collette will be doing the lessons on Sunday. J.J. Hendricks speaking Monday night. Anthony Warrens Tuesday night. Chris Hooten on Wednesday. And Kevin Cawley on Thursday. And so I believe the lessons there are around the theme, "Ye who are weary, come home." And so, again, hope you can be there. If you're anywhere in this northeast Texas area, southern Arkansas, southern Oklahoma, Louisiana, we'd love to have you out there, and I know they would be encouraged by it. Also want to encourage the ladies out there to visit TexasLadiesInChrist.org, and that annual ladies retreat in Brady, Texas, central Texas there, is coming up very soon, October 5th through 7th. And the deadline to register is September the 1st, and so coming up on that very quickly. But also, the space is running out, and they are probably about three-quarters full right now. And so encourage you, if you'd like to attend this year, check that out. Visit that website, TexasLadiesInChrist.org, to find more information and go ahead and register from there. Finally, mark your calendar September 15th through the 17th for a marriage and family seminar hosted by the Granberry Street congregation in Cleburne, Texas. They are having John and Carla Moore out to teach those classes. Also invite your children. They have child care for ages 1 to 3 and classes for the older kids then. And so hope that you can be a part of that. You can find more information at cleburne.church. If you visit that website, cleburne.church, and you can find out the information that you need there. And so just a few of the events that are going on that certainly encourage you to keep in your the forefront of your mind. And we'll have more, I'm sure, as this fall season of gospel meetings and events begins to kick off. We'll have more information on those very soon. And so with that, let's jump over into our text this morning and get studying. As once again, I think about the trust and the confidence that the psalmist is continuing to display in God. And You know, sometimes I feel very repetitious in studying these psalms, and at the same time, one of the things that continues to remind me is in all times, in all situations, and all the problems or the difficulties that the psalmist was facing in life, he could always turn to God. And I certainly see that again in Psalm 140 as he is praying again for God's help. He is trusting in him. And then also we're going to get to see in Psalm 141 this idea of the closeness that the psalmist then wants to have with God. Because I can rely on you, help me then to draw near unto you. And so an excellent combination of psalms here as we look once again at this confidence and the trust that the psalmist would have in God. First, in God as our deliverer in Psalm 140. And so let's look there at the beginning of his prayer in verse 1 through 5. Psalm 140, verse 1 through 5.
Deliver me, O Lord, from the evil man. Preserve me from the violent man, which imagine mischiefs in their heart. Continually are they gathered together for war. They have sharpened their tongues like a serpent. Adder's poison is under their lips. Keep me, O Lord, from the hands of the wicked. Preserve me from the violent man, who have purposed to overthrow my goings. The proud have hid a snare for me, and cords. They have spread a net by the wayside. They have set gins for me.
As I look through here again, there's this recognition of wickedness. And it is a reminder to me that there is a constant battle between that which is right and that which is wrong. There's a battle between truth and error. There's a battle between sinfulness and righteousness. And the psalmist knows here two things. One, that exists. Deliver me from this. But he also knows to whom to turn. Deliver me, O Lord. You are the one that I can trust in. You are the one that can deliver me from these evil men, from these violent men, from the wicked. And indeed, here sees these problems and sees these difficulties that are about him. It shouldn't be a great surprise to us. Jesus himself warns us as New Testament Christians even, that there are going to be those that are opposed to us simply because we stand for truth. We stand for that which is right. And the world is not going to like to be reproved by light as it stands in darkness. And so time and again through the teachings of Jesus, we see those warnings. We see it in the Beatitudes, in the idea of blessed are you when you are persecuted. And reminder there, you're persecuted for my name's sake. There's going to be reminders throughout of how that, especially John, will deal with the idea Jesus came as a light into the world, and the world received him not because of the darkness. And it sets up this contrast for us between this this righteousness and wickedness. And so there's this understanding here that these exist, these problems, these difficulties are here. They have set themselves against me. Again, I think that's an important aspect as we are striving to be peacemakers, that these are the wicked are those that have set themselves against me. When we align ourselves with God, those who are wicked are fighting against, ultimately, God. And so they have set themselves, they have brought these things, they have brought these troubles upon me. Not that I have brought them upon myself because of any wicked action of my own, not because I have brought them in participating in these things, but because I have striven to do that which is right. And so there's this wickedness. Here is his prayer. Would you deliver me, God? From these things.
Yeah. I'm interested to notice so many times, I guess primarily because we've been studying the Psalms, mm-hmm. but this mention of the wicked, the evil. And so I was looking at the way this was playing out before me, the wicked, the evil man is mentioned in verse 1. The wicked and evil man imagines mischiefs, even beginning in his heart. Mm-hmm. And so that's where it starts. Jesus says those things that come out of your mouth come from the heart, you know, those things that defile us. So it begins in the heart. And so mm-hmm. the evil man begins in the heart. Verse 3, it comes out of his mouth. He's made comments, those things that hurt, those things that are deadly. Proverbs 12, verse 18, there is that speaketh like the piercings of a sword. You know, we can say things that we can't take back. We can say mm-hmm. things that'll cut a man down and harm him even permanently, you know, even in the assault of a, assassination of a man's character. And then there are the hands in verse 4. You see the way that it comes from the heart. It comes out of the mouth. It comes through the hands. And they use those hands and they use their mouth even to set traps. And so you see, this all-encompassing aspect of the evil man here. And so save me from his tongue, save me from his mouth, you know, his hands, save me from the traps that he has laid in front of me. The evil one is certainly something, you know, to consider when you think about the devil and our adversary, the liar, the murderer that Jesus spoke of in John 8. And there's a lot to consider there. Mm-hmm. And so when we're asking for this, we're asking a great deal.
Right.
We have a lot to be warned about, even just in these couple of verses, about who the evil man really is. It's a scary thing.
Right. And I don't want to attach in with that some things that we're going to see there really throughout the psalm, but even in this first section. There's this prayer for deliverance, and he's describing here what he's asking to be delivered from. And one of the things that struck me was just this concept of it's not just the violent man in terms of the one who is seeking actively to do us harm in a physical nature. But it was interesting to me to see here he includes that one who is attacking me with his tongue, this one who is devising, who is even in other times is going to be described as laying upon their beds at night wondering what wickedness they can do the next day, that it's not just with our hands. Sometimes it's with our minds. Sometimes it's with our tongues that we're doing this wickedness. Of course, we talk about Jesus there, and we talk about the idea of how this wickedness develops within the heart. That's where our thoughts, our desires, our actions begin to form. But also thought there about the tongue. And James chapter 3, even, that idea there of how powerful the tongue is. James describes it in verse 5 of chapter 3. The tongue is a little member and boasteth great things, and behold, how great a fire, how great a matter a little fire kindleth. How this which appears to be such an insignificant part of our body, yet can do so much damage. So it's not just the wicked in the sense of those who have actively set the snares and the traps and the physical harms, but the one who's set the snares and the traps even of the mouth, and how much damage can be done there by the enemies that speak lies. It hopefully is an encouragement to us to think about our own selves. Where do we fall? Am I one who is attacking or one who's building up? Am I one who is perverting truth and justice by the things that I say, or the one who is spreading truth and justice and actively seeking after it? And so we need to be cautious of our actions. And certainly here this wickedness took on multiple forms, if you will, as he speaks about this wickedness and describes it.
I don't see the Pharisees here, do you? Mm-hmm. You know, so many times I can imagine them laying in their beds at night and wondering, how are we going to get Jesus tomorrow? Because the Scripture says on several occasions that they sought to catch him in his words, you know, to mm-hmm. catch him in a corner and set a trap for him. And so they would lay traps for him in many different instances, you know. And that's what, I can almost see it envisioned here. You know, they wake up in the morning and look for the opportunity to catch Jesus in something. Right. And so here the proud, right, the Pharisees, mm-hmm. have hit a snare for Jesus, you know. And, of course, he was, I think so many times, so very wise and able even just to be silent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what was it where he would bend down and write in the dirt and then look up and they're all gone.
Right.
You know. Anyway, I don't know. I think of so many different things along these lines. But
right.
That's what I saw right there was the Pharisees.
Right. And very good thoughts, even in that idea of how many people, and maybe even a word of warning to us, it's right, as we're going to see here in just a moment, it's right for us to pray against evil. It's right for us to even wish the destruction of that which is evil in whatever form God desires to bring that about. But let us be cautious. There are a lot of people who are zealous and even religious, and we learn that from the Pharisees. We learn it later from the Jews, but they were zealously and religiously wrong. Mm-hmm. And so make sure that we're on the side of right and are opposing that which is wrong. I'm thinking there of Acts chapter 10, as Paul even speaks about his brethren according to the flesh, the Jews, that had a zeal for God, but it wasn't according to right to knowledge.
Oh,
and they went about to bring about their own righteousness. They wanted to do it their way, even though that was the wrong way. And they would fight against Paul and against the truth as well. And so here is this wickedness, these problems that have plagued him, that have circled him about. And yet he is calling out to God, the one whom he can trust, the one whom he can rely upon for, as we see next, this deliverance. And so we see a prayer again here in, or continued really, in verse 6 through 11.
I said unto the Lord, Thou art my God. Hear the voice of my supplications, O Lord. O God, the Lord, the strength of my salvation, Thou hast covered my head in the day of battle. Grant not, O Lord, the desires of the wicked. Further not his wicked device, lest they exalt themselves. As for the head of those that compass me about, let the mischief of their own lips cover them. Let burning coals fall upon them. Let them be cast into the fire, into the deep pits, that they rise not up again. Let not an evil speaker be established in the earth. Evil shall hunt the violent man to overthrow him.
Okay, and we kind of press pause in the middle of that prayer. We're going to conclude it here in just a second. But he starts first with his supplications against the wickedness. You know, we've talked some through the Psalms about this idea of imprecatory Psalms. The Psalms that are set against wickedness, set against evil. And here he's doing the same thing. Mm. Lord, deliver me from these people. That can take a lot of different forms. I can pray against wickedness, and I'm going to leave that in the hands of God as to how that's accomplished. It may be that wickedness is curbed by learning of the truth, the hearing of the gospel. And so a heart is softened. And now instead of fighting against that which is godly and upright, now that person becomes a supporter of it. Paul was stopped in his tracks as a persecutor of Christianity by the good news of the gospel. There was an altering. There was a changing there of his life. But it can also be stopped by means of destruction. We think about enemies of God that have been destroyed through time, those that rose up against God and his people in pride that God would cast down. We think about opposers, if you will, of the gospel going forth and how many times they were silenced, as you read there through the book of Acts, and were brought to naught. We think about the opposers of Jesus, you know, how victorious they thought they were when Jesus was hanging on the cross. And yet Sunday morning came, and he is not here. He is risen. They thought they had silenced Jesus, and now he's back and being proclaimed even more. And so here, praying for deliverance, and who does he turn to? He turns to God. You are my God. Hear, if you will, my supplication. Why? Because you're my strong deliverer. You're the one in whom I can trust. You are the one, verse 7, that will cover my head in the day of battle there, and I'm thinking there of a helmet. Think of Ephesians 6 and the gospel armor, you know, how we are protected, ready to go forth into battle because we are well shielded with that which God has provided for. That's one thing that I always stress and think about there in Ephesians chapter 6. Has not God provided for that armor? Has he not given us all things that we need for life and godliness, Peter will talk about? But he's made possible the truth. He's made possible that faith. He's made possible, you know, all the aspects of that Christian armor. But he still calls upon us, you take it up. You learn to use it. You learn to be skillful in the acquisition, the putting on, the using of that armor, and even the defensive weapon, the sword, the word of the Spirit, that we go forth into battle with. God's provided it. He's made it accessible unto us, but you have to take it up. You have to use it. You have to learn it. And so he's calling upon you who are my help. Don't help the wicked. Don't let them surround me and destroy me. Don't let the slanderers be established, but rather hunt down the violent man. And even here, this idea as he's reading through here, this idea, let them fall under their own wickedness. Let their evil fall back upon themselves. Mm-hmm. They've wished evil upon others. How fitting it is if that evil returns to them. And so this idea, verse 9, let the mischief of their own lips cover them. Let that destruction come upon them. Let these burning fire, coals of this fire fall upon them, that they rise not again. Even here at verse 11, the evil will hunt down the violent man and overthrow him. Again, these are the ones that have set the traps. These are the ones that have done this violence first. Now they're going to be falling by their own means. Mm. Jesus had something to say about that, I think, in the sense of let him that lives by the sword will die by the sword. Mm. If you have lived your life of wickedness, if you have participated in all these things, don't be surprised when those things come back upon you and fall upon your own destruction. And that is what the psalmist here is praying for. Certainly, don't let them succeed in their evil purposes. Don't aid them in their evil purposes, but rather allow them here to be cast down. And I was thinking there of Matthew 26:52, in reference there to the ones that take the sword shall perish with the sword. There, as he's encouraging his disciples even not to fight on that occasion. Mm-hmm. And so there his prayer against these wicked.
You know, I thought of right there, I thought about Haman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look toward the end of the book there in Esther chapter 7 and verse number 10, you know, Haman had worked so very hard to destroy all the Jews. He'd even built gallows, you know. And then there in verse number 10, they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so, you know, that certainly wasn't in Haman's mind. He sought to do mischief. He sought to be that wicked individual. He sought to destroy, you know, even through what we refer to, I guess, as genocide. You know, he was mm-hmm. looking to wipe out an entire population, ultimately, because of the jealous rage that he was encompassed with, you know. Mm-hmm. And so here's this wicked individual Here's this person that certainly would be encompassed with his own trap, you know, would fall into his own trap. His own mischief would cover him, you know, as you mentioned in verse number 9. A lot of examples, you know, of that throughout the Bible. So be careful, you know, when you go to lay a trap for somebody, because you might find yourself in it.
Amen. A few more things I want to hit on that, but let's go ahead and hit verse 12 and 13 to finish up this prayer and the confidence that he has in God, and then we'll make a few more comments about the psalm.
I know that the Lord will maintain the cause of the afflicted and the right of the poor. Surely the righteous shall give thanks unto thy name. The upright shall dwell in thy presence.
And so we see this confidence, the confidence that the Lord will uphold the cause of the afflicted. Here, certainly the afflicted that are suffering wrongfully, I think is understood there. Not the evil that might be afflicted as their troubles fall back upon them, but also here the right of the poor, the justice here for those who are in need. And so when the Lord does so, the righteous will give thanks unto your name, the upright will dwell in your presence. Mm. And so he has confidence. The Lord is going to do that which is right. My first thought there was Abraham standing in that valley looking over on Sodom and Gomorrah as the Lord tells him, I'm about to destroy these wicked cities. And Abraham, one of the great lines that he utters there, shall not the judge of all the earth do right? Mm. There was a confidence there that I know that you're going to do that which is right, that which is just, that which is holy. And the psalmist has the same confidence. I know that you are going to stand against the wicked. I know that you are going to support and encourage the upright. And really, we have that same confidence that Paul will talk to the Christians at Thessalonica about, as he talks about even the destruction of the world. There is some comfort there that he can give them, because he is able to tell them, even 2 Thessalonians 1 and verse 6, it is a righteous thing with God to recompense tribulation to those who trouble you. And to you who are troubled, rest with us, when the Lord Jesus shall be revealed from heaven with his mighty angels in flaming fire, taking vengeance on them that know not God, and that obey not the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. He said, God is right. He is just. He is holy. He is going to do that which is right. Do you not know that he is going to give trouble to those who are currently troubling the righteous, and he's going to give rest to those who are currently troubled? God is going to do that which is right. And the psalmist is seeing the same thing. I know that the Lord is going to do that which is right. Mm-hmm. And so even as he's surrounded by all of these problems, nevertheless, he knows that he can trust in God.
We have to, Ryan, we have to be ready to accept his answers too. Mm-hmm. You know, I may be looking for a yes or a absolutely, and I won't always get that. And a lot of those scenarios play out in front of us, those accounts rather. Mm-hmm. You know, Habakkuk would wonder, you know, Lord, how in the world are you going to make this mess right? You know, how long are you going to let us suffer? And he says, don't worry, I'm sending the Chaldeans. Mm-hmm. And he's like, excuse me, who? You know, those nasty, awful people. And then that same mindset was reflected last night even in Richard's good message that he brought to us, you know, about Jonah. And so when this nasty, ugly people in Jonah's mind, you know, that didn't deserve a second chance, got to experience the goodness and the mercy of God, you know, he makes that statement in chapter 4. He says, I knew that thou art a gracious God and merciful, slow to anger and of great kindness. And so that's Jonah knew who God was. and he knew exactly what to expect. And so we, too, if you try to wrap that up into a point, we know what to expect in the end, too, because he's told us, you know, even as you read from the Thessalonian account, you know, for them that, you know, deny, there's going to be a reward. And for those that us that, you know, confess and acknowledge and continue to live faithfully, there's a reward as well. So we can expect him to do that which is right. He did it in Jonah's account. He did it in Habakkuk's account. It took on a different form that we were, you know, maybe considering in our own minds. But to your point, he'll always do what's right.
That's right. It's always amazed me, I guess, Jonah's statement there. He says it almost as a negative thing as he talks here about the great qualities of God. And ultimately, that's one of the lessons he needed to learn. You like it when God treats you well. What about when he shows those same attributes unto others? And so certainly a few thoughts here that we can, I think, tie back to the New Testament. I'm certainly thinking of Hebrews 13, and I think we've mentioned this before. Hebrews 13, verse 5 and 6, the confidence there that we know the Lord will never forsake us. And then he was able to say in verse 6, the Lord is my helper. I will not fear what man will do unto me. Again, I think we talk about timing. God's not always going to deliver on our time, but in the end, he's going to do that which is right, whether it's in this life, whether it's in the next, whether it's as immediately as we would like, or a few months or a few years down the road as he shows his long-suffering patience, that the Lord will do that which is right. Certainly an encouragement here to us. Another thing we haven't necessarily talked about here in this psalm, but it's the idea that he is standing opposed to wickedness. That ought to also be a reminder to us. I don't want anything to do with it. In fact, I want it put far away from me. That's my prayer unto God. And I think there about Ephesians 5 and verse 11, this idea here that we are to have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather to reprove them. We ought to be standing against wickedness, and certainly that's the prayer of the psalmist here. I think we have a few minutes to go ahead and talk about this point as well, but just the idea of God as the deliverer. We've talked about that a lot through the different psalms, but, you know, and I'm not going to lie, this I can't take credit for a lot of these thoughts. I've mentioned before, certainly, how much, especially in the Psalms, I rely and lean heavily upon a great book by Roy Deaver, who went through and outlined a lot of these Psalms and gave a lot of great points and ideas. But he mentioned some things here, just thinking through the Scriptures about God as the deliverer. This is not an exhaustive list. Certainly, but you think about God as the deliverer. Did he not deliver Noah and his family? Here he delivered just. He delivered righteous Lot. During the time of the flood, he delivered righteous Lot, as mentioned there in 2 Peter 2 and verse 7, even though some of his family was lost because of the wickedness that they imbibed or took part of, came to love. And yet, when they would flee, they were delivered. We've talked about the great deliverance from Egypt that God would give unto the nation of Israel, as he would fight for them and bring them into the land of Canaan. He would deliver Daniel from the lion's den. He would deliver those Hebrew youths from the fiery furnace. He would deliver. We've talked even here recently in the Psalms of Israel from her captivity after the Babylonians and after the Assyrians here. Nevertheless, God would deliver them from that captivity. He would deliver Jesus from the hand of Herod, even as he's born, in his desire to destroy all those young youths, young men, young boys. Nevertheless, here is God that's watching over his son, even as Moses had been delivered to be a deliverer for the children of Israel. Again, those are just a few examples. But then we think about ourselves. Is he not able to deliver from sin with the power of the gospel? Is he not able to deliver from wickedness? You know, here are those who at the first part of this psalm are spoken against as those violent and wicked men. What has the power to change them? Well, the power of the gospel. Titus chapter 2, verse 11 and 14, that reminds us the grace of God has appeared unto all men, and it now teaches us. It teaches us how to live. It teaches us how to put away those things that are ungodly and rather to live soberly and righteously in this present world. Can deliver out of temptation. Has the power, as we'll see one day, to deliver out of the grave in the great resurrection. Deliver up the kingdom of God to the Father. And on that list can go. But certainly a powerful reminder there. You know, so oftentimes we talk about God will deliver. And I don't know that we've stopped and thought really about the many times that God did deliver and even apply that to our own lives, about the things that he has delivered us from even in our times, and are having confidence that he will continue to do that which is right.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that here in this psalm, that the psalmist once again says, you are the one that can, you are the one that will deliver. I'm going to put my trust and my confidence in you to always do that which is right. And that's the same confidence I want to have in God today, to know that he's going to do that which is right, even when others will fail me and others sometimes will forsake me. God will not, and he will do that which is right.
You know, every time we bring up the idea of deliverance, that little default switch in the back of my head that flips every single time goes to Judges.
Mm-hmm.
You know, over and again, that's exactly what he does, is he sends a deliverer. He sends a savior. He sends one that's able to lead them in a direction of righteousness. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, over and again, they continue to fall. They continue to stumble. They continue to make, you know, bad decisions. But, you know, he's right there. If they'll just, you know, repent, if they'll just change and go back to what they're supposed to be doing, he's faithful and just. And that sounds a whole lot like 1 John 1. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, he's an amazing creator, and I think some of that mindset actually is what, you know, kind of helped me in the Vacation Bible School thought this year, because, you know, you think about his creation power and what he did, and you go to the very first pages of the Bible and you see that, but then you continue to see, you know, the psalmist says, create in me a new heart. You continue to see Romans 6, you know, raised to walk in newness of life. You know, we are new creatures, Paul says. So mm-hmm. he still is creating today, you know, and is able to do that through Jesus, the deliverer, you know. Same thing in the fighting power. You know, he's always fought for his people. He's always defended and delivered his people, and he's still doing that today. So says the whole book of Revelation.
Mm-hmm.
And in saving, you know, you mentioned Noah and others that have been saved, and he's still continuing to save us today, you know. So same yesterday and today and tomorrow. I mean, so what an amazing deliverer mm-hmm. he is indeed.
Very good. Very good. You are fortunate that I'm not a better singer. The song has been going through my head. Great song we sing from time to time. He is able. He is able. He is able to deliver thee. Though by sin oppressed, go to him for rest. Our God is able to deliver thee. And that certainly was a song that kept going through my head looking through that psalm. Well, as we need to shift here into Psalm 141 as we continue in our study, I see a connection here. Whether the psalms necessarily were connected or not, it's still interesting to see how sometimes these psalms tie together. But you think about there, the psalmist and his dependence and his trust is in God. I almost see within Psalm 141 now this desire, because you are righteous, because you are powerful to deliver, because you're going to uphold the righteousness or the righteous, then I want to be with you. And I see that here, that the psalmist is saying, my eyes are set on you. I want to follow after you. I want to draw close to you by doing that which is right. And so let's look first at his plea here in verse 1 and 2.
Lord, I cry unto thee. Make haste unto me. Give ear unto my voice when I cry unto thee. Let my prayer be set forth before thee as incense, and the lifting up of my hands as the evening sacrifice.
All right. We'll come back and maybe see more about some of these sections as we go, but primarily just here first, this plea. And it's the plea of the righteous that's calling unto God, hear my prayer. And interesting here, even in the Old Testament, sometimes we think about the Old Testament worship and that incense, altar of incense that was to go up before God as a continual reminder. We think about our prayers of the New Testament as a type and a type situation. But even here in the Old Testament, those prayers are introduced here as this incense rising up before God. And so would that this prayer can come before your throne. Would that it could come before your presence as the psalmist humbles himself and once again turns himself unto God. And so there's his plea for this prayer to be heard. We might break it next into verse 3 and 4, his prayer. What's my desire? Verse 3 and 4.
Set a watch, O Lord, before my mouth. Keep the door of my lips. Incline not my heart to any evil thing, to practice wicked works with the men that work iniquity, and let me not eat of their dainties.
Mm. Again, I think we could pause there and talk for an hour as we think about a lot of different themes and ideas of set a watch before my mouth, guard my tongue. Well, we talked about the tongue in the last chapter. It's the wicked that use their tongue even unto destruction and to wickedness. And so set this guard, if you will, this watch, and keep the doors of my lips. Help me to guard those things that I say. Even in my actions, in verse 4, incline not my heart to any evil thing. I don't want any part of that wickedness. I don't want to practice the wicked works with those that work iniquity. And I don't want to even eat of those things. I don't want to have any participation with them, nor do I want to benefit from the works of wickedness. My mind goes a few different directions. I think it goes back to Psalm chapter 1, where we began with the idea of, well, who is the righteous man? He began there. Verse 1, blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. There is no participation. I don't want to begin walking in their direction. I don't want to stand around and converse with them, and I certainly don't want to sit with them and partake of their wicked works. I think there as well of Timothy and Paul's encouragement to Timothy. You be an example. 1 Timothy 4 and verse 12, be an example in word, in conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity. Timothy, guard your life. Guard your example. Guard your actions. And even one more, let me throw in on top of that, in Romans 1 and verse 32, as he has gone through these wicked actions of the largely of the Gentiles, and he comes down to the end of that section, who knowing the judgment of God, that they commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. And I see here the psalmist saying, I don't want even to partake of the dainties there, verse 4, that have come from their wickedness. I don't want any part of it. And so this one, I want to guard my life. I want to guard the things that I do. And so here is a purity in speech, purity in heart, a purity in conduct, a purity even in his associations. Lord, let me draw closer to you and not those wicked.
Absolutely. That's a good thought for anybody this morning. You know, we're constantly drawn to these lessons, and, you know, I don't know that I hadn't been guilty of skipping over the Psalms from time to time, you know, but as you had the opportunity to look here, even as we've studied for so very long now, You know, there's a certain type of heart that is pleasing before God, and there's a certain actions, you know, that is pleasing before God. And over and again, there is this amazing avenue that has been created. You know, he wants to hear from us.
Mm-hmm.
And the psalmist repeatedly is saying, I cry unto you, listen to me, incline your ear, and give response. And I'm just tickled to see that even on a daily basis as we look through here. You know, that's beautiful to be able to lay it all out before him. And as you said, even from the Hebrews account, you know, with mm-hmm. great confidence.
You know, there another thought, as you were mentioning, maybe we hit on that, but to drive it home a little more, that idea that the psalmist not only cries out unto God for deliverance and protection and all of these things, but to remember here, it comes with a cost, if you will. It comes with an understanding. God's going to uphold the righteous, but that means I need to live the righteous life.
Mm-hmm.
Am I going to make mistakes? Am I going to stumble? Yes. But here's his prayer. Remove that temptation from me. Help me to walk in those ways that are good. Help me to guard myself. We see that in, well, we may come back to that, but it's, how do I know right and wrong? Mm-hmm. I'm going to turn to God. I'm going to turn to his word. And so help me follow after those things that you have said are right and good. And so, again, I think we live sometimes in a world that says, well, we ought to just accept that we are sinful beings and just go ahead and do what we're going to do and ask God for forgiveness later. Even when I look at the Psalms, I see this desire. I want to do that which is right. And I want to be moved in that way and in that direction. Mm-hmm. After his prayer, let's look here in verse 5 through 6 as he makes this pronouncement.
Let the righteous smite me. It shall be a kindness, and let him reprove me. It shall be an excellent oil, which shall not break my head. For yet my prayer also shall be in their calamities. When their judges are overthrown in stony places, they shall hear my words, for they are sweet.
Okay, here the psalmist is going to be steadfast. He's steadfast in his prayer, but he also pronounces here the wicked opposition he knows is going to be defeated. Let a righteous man here smite me. Reprove me. Let him correct me, and that will be a kindness. That's humility.
Yeah.
We don't often like to be corrected. We don't like to be told we're wrong. But he said, if a righteous man will correct me, it will be a kindness. Mm. If he shows me what I'm doing that's wrong, if he shows me where I have gone astray, that is good, because that kind of correction will be as oil upon my head. My head will not refuse it, or it will not break my head. In other words, this is going to build me up. This is going to help. And so even in the calamities of wicked opposition, he continues, still he is going to continue to pray. They are going to be overthrown, but they will also come to understand my words are true. Why? Because I'm speaking the truths of God. And so here, this confidence that they're going to be overthrown, and yet they're still going to continue to hear my prayer, they're going to continue to hear my supplications, and they're going to know that these things were true because they are going to be overthrown, and they will come to know that these things were true. And so this confidence in his continued prayer, this confidence in the defeat of the wicked. Again, what is one of the, forces, I guess, for a lack of a better word, to drive me to want to do good? Well, I know the wicked are going to be overthrown. I know that those who have set themselves against God and against that which is righteous, one day are going to be cast down. And so I don't want to participate with them. Instead, I want to continue to do that which is right. Let's go ahead and look here at the end of this psalm in verse 7 through 10, this idea of preservation.
Our bones are scattered at the grave's mouth, as when one cutteth and cleaveth wood upon the earth. But mine eyes are unto thee, O God, the Lord. In thee is my trust. Leave not my soul destitute. Keep me from my snare, from the snares which they have laid for me, and the gins of the workers of iniquity. Let the wicked fall into their own nets, whilst that I withal escape.
Here again is the opposition that he knows he faces in this life. And even here, praying for deliverance from the snare of the wicked. And we are scattered, as it were. Our bones are scattered at the grave's mouth. Well, they ought to be in the grave when you think about bones, but we're scattered as bones that have been scattered about outside of the grave. We're scattered about as even these wood splinters or these chips of wood are scattered about. But even when we face that opposition, even when we face those difficulties and troubles, verse 8, my eyes are unto you, O Lord. In thee is my trust. And so this prayer, this hope here, leave not my soul destitute. Again, I'm going to follow after you. Where is my heart set? Where are my eyes set? What am I looking unto? I'm looking unto God. It's him that I am trusting in. I'm seeking him for refuge. I am seeking him as my defense. And so keep me, verse 9, from the snares that they have laid for me, these traps that they have set for me, and let them fall into their own nets, why I can escape. And again, we saw that in that last psalm here. Let the wicked be caught in their own wickedness. Fall after the manner that they have sought to destroy me with. But me, let my eyes be unto you. Again, go back to verse 4, 3 and 4. Here's my desire. I want to do that which is right. I thought there of Psalm 119, 105. Thy word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. I see here the psalmist saying, direct me in those ways that are good. Yes, preserve me, be my protector, be my deliverer, but help me to walk with you. Again, this contrast of life. I don't want to walk the way of the wicked. I don't want to take part with them because I know the destruction that's coming unto them. But I know the reward. I know the blessings that the Lord is going to give unto the righteous. And so let me walk with God. And that's the great desire. That's the prayer that I see here within this psalm.
I don't know about you out there that have your study Bibles there in front of you, but maybe one of those great column references that you have there points you right back to Colossians 3.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Risen with Christ, seeking those things that are above, you know, setting your affections not on earthly things, but those things that are above, because, you know, 2 Peter 3, they're all going to be gone. Like Richard said last night, and he has a way with words. He said, all that stuff you got in your hand right now, all that stuff in your house is just a kindling for a big fire one of these days.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, don't be distracted. Don't allow, you know, your eyes to be turned another way, like when Peter stepped out of the ship, you know, onto the water, you know, continuing to look unto Jesus, continuing to keep your eyes focused the way the psalmist says here, even in calamity, I'll continue to seek those things that are above.
And I think that's one thing I like, especially attachment there to Colossians 3, is that encouragement. You keep on. You keep on having your eyes set on those things that are above. That is our goal. That is our aim. That's what we're pressing towards. And certainly the psalmist wanted to, certainly a great encouragement for us to do even the same today. And so, like the psalmist, like Paul encourages Timothy, let us guard our lives that we would walk upright. We would continue to walk in the light as he is in the light, and seek those things that would please God, and avoid those ways of the wicked, knowing that they will be cast down. Mm-hmm. And so some great lessons again there in these two psalms. But we find ourselves once again out of time. And so we're thankful that you have been able to join us. Hope that these psalms continue to be a benefit as we study through them. Just a week or so away here, we'll be moving out of the psalms and getting into the Proverbs. And so more great wisdom before us. But hope that you can join us tomorrow. Lord willing, Chip will be back with us, Psalm 142 to 144. And so we'll be looking forward to that study together and hope that you keep on listening right here with us on the Gospel Radio Network throughout the day. And as always, we hope that you have a great day.
Listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in His Word, let's remember His words in Luke 6:46, when He said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.